Welcome to Gold Soul, where empowered parenthood and conscious living meet. I'm Jessie, a licensed home birth midwife, here to explore birth, parenting, and personal growth. Through real stories, reflections, and chats with holistic experts, we'll uncover fresh insights, heartfelt support, and a bit of humor. Let's laugh, learn, and grow together through the beauty and challenges life brings. Hello, welcome back to the Gold Soul Podcast. You guys are in for the biggest treat today. So today we have nurse midwife extraordinaire, I think women's nurse practitioner, mama, and my best friend, Sarah Waldron. So this is going to be a really interesting conversation because we are going to probably be all over the place, but it'll be fun. And Sarah and I are going to talk today about the differences in our two different types of licensures, because we get asked all the time, what's the difference between a nurse midwife and a licensed midwife? We're going to talk about sustainability and birth work. And this is an episode you definitely want to listen all the way through because Sarah and I have a very exciting announcement at the end of this. So, yay, Sarah, we're finally doing this. Thanks for being on here, girl.
Yes, I'm so excited. I feel like I've been chomping at the bit to be here. So I'm super pumped and I'm very excited for everybody to get to the end to hear our special announcement.
All right, Sarah, let's get to it. All right, for those that don't know, why don't you give us an introduction on who you are, what makes you so magical, and how you got into midwifery?
Yeah. Okay, so I got into midwifery at a very young age, literally in my – I mean, I was reflecting back recently on it. I was only 20 when I learned about midwifery. I was in my undergraduate nursing program at UCI. I had a professor who was a nurse midwife, which I had no idea what that was. I knew I went into nursing. I wanted to go into women's health. I knew that. That was about the basis of what I knew. I just knew I wanted to watch babies be born. And so during one of our research classes, she encouraged me to watch The Business of Being Born, which is like a gateway for so many birth workers into the discovery of how magical birth can be. And so I remember watching that as a junior in college and immediately calling Tommy, my now husband, and like just going on. I was like, I'm going to catch babies in bathtubs and we're going to have our babies out of the hospital and I'm going to be a midwife. And he was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And my parents were like, I thought you wanted to be a nurse. What are you talking about? And I was like, well, I can be a nurse midwife. And I just like really dove into what that looked like and what that meant. I just kind of have been nerding out on birth quite literally since then. And so my first introduction into midwifery in person was through a birthing center with certified nurse midwives. And for the rest of my nursing program, when I was there, I got to do a capacity, work in a different capacity all over the place at the birth center. I, you know, got to go to births. I got to help prenatally. I helped postpartum. And it was really like, okay, this is what I want to do. I don't even need to work as a nurse. I'm just going to try to do this. And nursing 14 years ago looked very different than it does now. The demand for nurses is higher than ever right now. And so back then it was really hard to get new grad nursing jobs, let alone in specialty fields like labor and delivery, the emergency room, ICU. It just was very unheard of. And so, you know, after being at the birth center and then getting licensed as a nurse, I kind of was like, you know what? I've worked really hard to do this. I'm going to work as a nurse and see where it takes me for right now. And we moved to Santa Barbara and I worked at the hospital there in pulmonary, renal, and infectious disease. So whoop, way left turn from birth, nothing related to it. And in the moment, I was like, this is not what I want to do. I can't imagine doing this forever. I really just want to get back to women's health. But of course, hindsight's always 20/20. It was a really invaluable position. I learned a lot about the whole spectrum of life. I got to see the other end of the spectrum, right? I got to see death and I got to see people at their end of life and the kind of support and dignity that is required in the same way on the other end of that spectrum. I got to learn about really random cool infectious diseases that I have actually seen in my course of life also impact pregnant women. And so that's kind of a unique experience. And while we lived in Santa Barbara, I also got an opportunity to work at the birthing center there. And they were also pretty far turned from what I was used to. That was my first exposure to licensed midwives and certified professional midwives. And they had a hybrid of both at their birthing center. And it was in this really cool, it's still open. It's in this really cool house in Santa Barbara. Mm-hmm. So it's also different in that regard. Like, it's someone's home many, many years ago. People lived there and you can kind of feel that energy there. And it was really magical working there because I got to see this dynamic, as you and I have talked about plenty of times, between nurse midwives and licensed midwives, and like what that can look like, and kind of the biggest, most complete circle for care. And it was a really, really amazing experience being there. And then, to shorten the story, because I could talk about my life for hours, right? We moved back to Orange County so I could get a job in labor and delivery, because one of the big differences between licensed midwives and nurse midwives is we're nurses first. So frequently they like to see nursing experience in the same field that you're going to get any advanced practice degree in. And so in women's health and specifically midwifery, they want you to have labor and delivery experience. So I kind of was teetering on like, I know I need this. I need to just do it. And I had a friend from my undergrad program who worked down here and was like, we're always hiring. Come on over, which was an interesting flag that I, you know, maybe should have listened to, but ended up being exactly what I needed in the trajectory of how everything has panned out. So I started working labor and delivery. It was everything I thought it would be, and also everything I didn't think it would be all at the same time, which was interesting. I was really fortunate in the year that I worked there to see a multitude of high-risk experiences, which was really interesting. I actually really liked taking care of the higher-risk pregnancies, the higher-risk births. They were a little easier to compartmentalize from the low-risk physiologic births that I was seeing there, because those were way different than the low-risk physiologic birth out of the hospital. And so I frequently liked to be on the antepartum floor, which is where people were coming in for premature preterm rupture membranes. It's where people were coming in for preterm labor, early 30 weeks, and they've kind of just stayed there. And so it kind of gave me that continuity of care that I was used to from MedSurg too, where I got to come and the same shift after shift, I'd get to see the same people, which was kind of fun. And in the meantime, I also was still birth assisting with a birthing center and then some home birth midwives, which was really awesome. We had Violet that same time frame in life. And I had, you know, the birth of my own child really catapulted me even further into this this life that I live. And so we had her, I had her unmedicated, I had water birth. It was really wonderful and beautiful. And I remember postpartum being a shell shock, right? Like the first baby, you're just like, whoa. And I remember telling Tommy, like, I can't go back to working labor delivery. There's just, I can't do it. Now that I've had a baby and I'm in this postpartum period and I'm really more vulnerable already, I don't know what I want to do. And him being a firefighter, he's like, well, go work in the ER. And I'm like, that, I don't know about that. I don't know if that sounds like what I would be into. And I was in my head kind of like, well, what about peds? I really like kids. Pediatrics would be fun. And then, of course, there's a pediatric emergency room in Orange County. How lucky. So I interviewed there at 7 weeks postpartum and I pumped in the bathroom after, and I got to start working around the same time frame I would have gone back to work at my previous job, and spent the next year, maybe not even a year, maybe like 6 months working there, and I loved it. And the interpersonal dynamics between all the care providers was really great. I really enjoyed the type of nursing care I was doing. So it was a really nice job to have right after having my own babe. And like I said, I think about 6 months after, one of my friends I used to work with in labor delivery said, I'm applying to midwifery school. You should do it. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I'm ready. Violet's so little. I don't know. And she's like, you can always apply and then just say no. Like, if you get in, you don't have to go, because she knew my personality and she knew if I got in, I would not say no, because, you know, she was pushing me, you know, encouragement, right? And so I applied to midwifery school. By the time I get to the in-person interview process, I am now fully dedicated, if I get in, to go, because I've just continued to have this passion grow. And so that was it. I got into midwifery school at Cal State Fullerton, and I have a dual – I was a dual program, so I have a dual licensure of certified nurse midwifery and women's health nurse practitioner, like you said. And here we are. We're now – 4 years into catching babies, because my last year of school, I got to catch babies. And then I've worked at a birth center and now home birth. And so it's been really a cool reflection looking back on 20-year-old me figuring out, hey, this is really cool. I think I want to do this, and to being able to do it.
That's amazing. What a journey. I don't think I realized that Violet was so little when you started at Shock. Mm-hmm. So was that challenging for you, having, you know, a brand new baby at home and then working the emergency department of a children's hospital and all of those little sick babies that possibly came in or that you saw?
Yes and no. It's interesting looking back on it. I think in the realm of compartmentalizing, I was able to do that more. I think in a lot of ways, emergency rooms have the spectrum of care, right? Lots of people come to the emergency room for kind of primary care reasons. And so a lot of the times you're not necessarily seeing really sick kids. You're seeing sick kids for sure. You're seeing, you know, lots of viruses, lots of appendicitis, lots of kind of seemingly just like mild to moderately sick kids. And then every once in a while, because it's a trauma center, you do get the really intense more sick kids. And so those were always a little harder. I think I only had a couple shifts over the 4 years that I worked there. I can remember maybe like three that stand out of like being really hard to handle and a little bit more of a comparison to Violet's age. Maybe a couple of them were like her age at the time that it happened. A couple were a little bit older, but just the circumstances were really devastating. And so it was really hard, but it also gave me a lot of empowerment as a mother, because I was like, I know exactly what to look for if my kid is throwing up and what dehydration looks like. I know exactly how many days is too many days of a fever for viral infection and when we're worried about bacterial. And so it was an upside that I didn't anticipate. I don't think anybody goes into pediatric nursing thinking that that's going to help them be able to care for their kids better. Like, I don't think that's anybody's goal, but it was a definite upside. And it's also been an upside in midwifery practice, because so many of my clients will still text me for their 2-year-old if something's going on, you know, and I can offer, you know, sage wisdom and advice and kind of the knowing of like, no, this sounds exactly like a great time to call your pediatrician, or yes, this does sound like you actually need to go to Chalk. So it's been a helpful benefit for sure.
I mean, it's benefited me. I'll say that. Right? Yeah, I remember when Ozzy was a year old and he fell off of a chair and smacked his head. And I called you right away. Sarah, do I have to take him to the hospital? Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it's quite helpful to have your best friend have that experience. So let's talk about the question that we get asked frequently on what are the main differences between a certified nurse midwife and a licensed midwife or a certified professional midwife. I will let you start and I will interject accordingly.
Perfect. So again, the biggest difference at the very like base is education and previous experience. As a nurse first, I had the ability with my background in birth work to go into a certified professional midwifery program and become a licensed midwife, or I had the option, because I'm a nurse, to get an advanced practice degree and get my certified nurse midwife licensure. And it was definitely something I sat with, and I had to kind of compare which one in the, you know, 40-year plan maybe could work better for me. And I think one of the things that I had thought about already having gotten my bachelor's degree in nursing is that if I have a master's in nursing, if at any point in my career I wanted to pivot to education in the nursing setting specifically, I would be able to do that. And I think because there is a part of me that loves teaching and I love expanding midwifery knowledge especially, that is maybe a retirement goal, right? When my kids are having kids, of being able to teach this type of stuff. And so I think that was something I sat with. And so that's the big difference, is like, what's our preschooling background? And then program-wise, CNM programs are advanced practice nursing degree programs. And so a big difference, I feel like, because, having had friends do CPM programs kind of lining up in that same time frame and watching, you know, what you were doing, what Taylor was doing, kind of what was happening for both of us separately. A lot of the focus in my program was the fact that it was an advanced practice nursing degree. I took nursing theory classes. I took nursing research classes. I was being formed into having this advanced practice nursing brain. So diagnosing, treatment, management with pharmacology, that was all a part of my program. And I was one of the few people who went in knowing I wanted to be a home birth midwife. I was one of the only people, I think there were maybe three of us, who had been to out of hospital birth. Like, it was not a program for community home birth midwives. It was a program for midwives who maybe wanted to go straight into education, midwives who want to work in the hospital, midwives who want to do gynecologic care in the outpatient setting. It definitely wasn't a catching babies in bathtubs vibe, other than me. Like, that was, you know, and I went into the program knowing that I was the first person to initiate finding a clinical placement for myself that was out of hospital. It was definitely a unique experience for me in comparison to my classmates, because I knew what I was doing. And so it was interesting going through a program that was very tailored to advanced practice nursing. And then once we got into more of the baby catching, pregnancy care, postpartum care, it was interesting because it was such a little mild touch on the more alternative – I don't even like that they called alternative right. medicine, but, you know, alternative medicine. So, like, we got a very brief overview of some herbs and some homeopathy. We had a really, really awesome – she's the director of the program now – professor who has worked as a midwife in a variety of settings and overseas. And so she – often brought things up of like, you know, this is, it seems like alternative here, but in other countries, like, this is the basis. And so let's talk about it. And so it was really great because she offered such a unique perspective on stuff. But it was frequently more of a let's bring it up instead of this is a part of our curriculum. And so that was always interesting for me. I kind of had to hold the tether of the midwifery I had already been really blessed to witness with so many midwives. Because it for sure was a program a little bit more tailored to that medical side of things, for sure.
Yeah, and then just speaking on my experience, so for direct entry midwifery, which is what an LM in the state of California, that's the path we take, and your requirements for midwifery in a community setting or midwifery in general, I think is going to vary depending on the state you're in and what the state regulations will be. So in California, we're allowed to practice as either an LM, which is an LM and CPM, because when you get your LM, you have to already have your CPM, or a CNM. So those are the two paths that are allowed in California to legally practice. So for me, direct entry midwifery, well, I guess let me back up first, because I don't think a lot of people know this part about me, is when I was I think around 19, and I was trying to figure out what I'm going to do with my life, there was a moment that I was like, I want to be a nurse or I want to be a paramedic. And my mom was an RN for many, 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 many moons. I think she still keeps her RN active, but she hasn't practiced bedside in decades. But I always looked up to her so much and thought, what a cool profession. And so I had applied for the Golden West nursing program, or for the lotto for prereqs, because at that time it was so hard to even just get in the prereq classes. And I remember the first time sitting in on this room and thinking like there could be over a year and a half of time until I even can get into a prerequisite class, let alone the program. I'm like, no, that's not going to fly. So I shelved that idea. I actually went to FITM, a fashion school, and got a degree in product development. And that's like my past life. But anyway, all that being said, once I had my first baby, I was like, okay, you know, let's revisit this idea of supporting women in labor. Well, that was the first time I've actually visited it. But when I went to entertain the idea of midwifery school, I just knew I wanted to go the LM route over the CNM route. One reason, because of time. I didn't already have, you know, all the nursing experience. And again, at that time, I already had two kids. It's like, yeah, there's just no way I'm not doing that. But the other part was, the midwives I knew at that time were all licensed midwives. And I saw how they had practiced. I had inquired about, you know, the educational path. And it really intrigued me because it very much was kind of like this, how do I phrase it without sounding too woo? I mean, there's no way around it. It was like this kumbaya cohort, you know, you're learning traditional midwifery, physiological birth. And I would hear these stories about what school looked like for them. And, you know, I have to go down, because a lot of them went to the school in San Diego, which is the school that I ended up graduating from. I have to go down to school on a Saturday because we have this required skills day and it's like a potluck. I'm like, that's so cool. I want to do that. And anyway, so that's the reason why I had taken that path. And I'm so happy I did. I mean, obviously, that's all I know. But so for my education, the didactic portion was we worked in a cohort and we did different modules. And so you would go through one module a month and you just nailed that module into the ground, you know, whether it be shoulder dystocias, twins and breech, complications. And you worked up throughout the program to, you know, the intensity, I guess, of the module. But we did have a whole module just on herbs, a whole module just on homeopathy, where we literally made, I think it was over 100 of our own remedies, like sitting at a table learning how to make homeopathy. So it was a cool experience. And for me, so I think a big difference in regards to the education is, as Sarah mentioned, it's an advanced specialty nursing degree, right? Whereas mine, as a licensed midwife, it is very much approached as basic midwifery. And, you know, this is direct entry midwifery. And a lot of people have different feelings about that, but I actually prefer it because Sarah and I align in this regard that we like to stay in our scope. Like this is the bubble we feel comfortable practicing in. And I like knowing that these are the expectations of me. This is what my licensure, you know, tells me how I can and cannot operate. And I feel very confident in my skill set and knowledge around that. You know what I mean? So, and it's cool because with my experience, it was, it held me also as a mom because I was allowed to bring in my nursling babies when they were little. And it supported us as much as it can because Sarah and I are about to hop into the conversation about motherhood and midwifery. It is so hard and it's damn near impossible to get through midwifery school as a mom. So the fact that it was a little more accommodating really, really helped. But as midwives, you know, there are still differences within our practice or our, I should say, scope or licensure restrictions. For the most part, you know, the rules are very similar. You know, we have the same time frame. Labor has to occur spontaneously between 37 and 42 weeks, has to be a singleton, not a multiple, has to be head down at the onset of labor. It has to be low risk. Like we still have those same parameters, but I think it's really cool because Sarah has the ability to write prescriptions if someone needs that. And she's not going to, you know, it's still got to stay within that low risk and within, you know, her scope. But I think that's really, really rad. And it is cool because at, I should say another thing that's cool is there was a time when nurse midwives had to operate under the scope of an OB. And so it really restricted them because we as licensed midwives, we never had to. We just report directly to the medical board. We don't have to operate underneath anyone for supervision. We're not required to have backup physicians. And so I know even prior to, you know, developing a close relationship with Sarah, that was challenging for so many nurse midwives because there's not a lot of OBs in Southern California that are like, yeah, I'll back you up. I'll be that person for you because, you know, there's a lot on the line for them because there's still a witch hunt to get around community-based midwifery, around home birth, birth center births. But that has, since in the last few years, has been lifted. So now they have more freedom with that. But there are still some things that you guys have to – that are a little different, like VBACs, right? That's one thing between you and I that's a little different.
Yeah. And I think that in and of itself is because we're licensed by two different bodies, mm-hmm. governing bodies. My licensure still is under the Board of Registered Nurses. So it is – something that I continue with my RN licensure. And like you said, you're licensed under the medical board. And so that is, I think, where those big differences come in. I think it also impacts the basis for like what we're learning in school, right? Like, because we're licensed under the BRN and because we're getting advanced practice nursing degrees, we kind of have to like meet the bare minimum expectations of what getting a master's in nursing even looks like. And then also you're getting a midwifery license where you said direct entry midwifery has that really just like, this is what you're doing. This is what you're learning. And one of the big differences is that governing board that licenses us. So yeah, I think it was definitely before I was done with school. I want to say it was around the time Nancy was opening her practice here, because she was, I think, outside of the birthing centers, she was the first home birth nurse midwife because she didn't have to have physician supervision. She got licensed and operated right after that. And that kind of has opened the door for now. There's been four nurse midwives that are working in the community setting, which is a big difference. And it is a common misconception still, depending on the hospital, depending on the charge nurse you talk to, if you're transferring, I have almost half the time gotten the, well, who's your backup physician phone call?
Me too. Yeah, and it's crazy.
It's one of those like gaps in knowledge of like, well, why do some people have some and some people don't? And well, but everybody used to send their transfers to so-and-so at such and such, and now you're not. And so I think that was like, even though it's been like at least 5 years since.
And we could talk to Nancy on the side or whoever, yeah. But I think that she did. There was, I want to say that shift happened because I was living in Long Beach at the time. Because I remember the email coming through CALM, which is California Licensed Midwives Organization. I remember that coming through announcing like, hey, CNMs no longer need OB supervision. So I want to say maybe it had been in the talks when Nancy. But anyway, it's less than 5 years, regardless. Yeah, it's less than 5 years. And I mean, the hospitals never know what we're allowed to do and not do anyway. And they like to like act like they do. I wish that we could have that collaboration. Like, hey, let's like all have a big luncheon. I mean, because at the end of the day, we all want to serve the community. We all get into this work, this world of prenatal care, obstetrics, whatever you want to call it. We get into this work to better the outcomes for families, whether it's, you know, physically, emotionally, mentally. Everyone has a different driving reason, but we have the same goal. And the more collaborative care and the more cohesiveness when transfers are required or wanted, desired, the better it's going to be for everyone. I mean, even down to like a financial element for the community. Like it's just, I don't know. That's a whole nother conversation to have. But
next podcast.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But let's kind of talk, and I didn't prep you for this one, but let's kind of talk about, because you and I have had private conversations about I have to phrase this very carefully because I don't want to make anyone mad. Midwifery. Okay, so a couple things. We're going to talk about motherhood and midwifery or birth work because this is applicable, you know, even to doulas, anyone who, you know, is on call for births. We're going to talk about sustainability. But like, let's also talk about this kind of gap in the community. And I'm like, I feel like I'm going to be dodging bullets and arrows right now. But there is a huge gap in regards to seamless cohesiveness, I think, even in the community, especially amongst nurse midwives and licensed midwives. And it is really silly. I think midwifery in general, it's kind of, you know, when I was in school, we used to call it midwifery islands. Like, it feels very isolating because everyone is a solo practitioner. Unless you work in a birth center, but there are very few group practices. Out of state, I mean, I don't know what Northern California looks like very much, but I know in other states there are a lot of group practices and that helps it to be sustainable. But in Southern California, it's kind of like one man for themselves. And you really feel that, especially between the two different types of licensures, that there are very few groups of even just like friendly midwives that really work well together, because like we have the peer reviews that are still separated. And what do you think the reason for that is? And how do you think as a community, if other communities are feeling that same vibe, how do we bring that together a little bit better? I know this is, I'm like so scared because I'm like, I'm going to get some messages about this.
That's funny. No, I think your observation is very, very accurate. I think that the probably biggest overarching, and this is not just in Orange County, this is everywhere, because I'm a part of a couple different Midwives Anonymous Facebook group, or, you know, midwifery buy sell, blah, blah, blah. And there is a very, it's funny you were talking about witch hunt earlier. There's like an inner midwifery witch hunt almost of the right type of midwife, the right way to be a midwife, the right way to do this work. And it doesn't benefit anybody because there is a midwife for every type of person. There is free birth all the way to hospital midwifery, right? There is a huge spectrum of what individually people want and desire and need in their journey of becoming parents. And so it's interesting that so much of this conversation within the midwifery community, especially if people are coming to their peers and saying, hey, I had this situation, blah, 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 blah. And there's kind of this like, well, why would you even do that? Blah, 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 blah. And like, it's kind of, it spirals a little bit because there's this idea of a wrong type of midwife. I don't know if I've ever been referred to it as, I've never referred to someone as this, but it is a thing to call people medwives, which is a really big bummer because I get it. My midwifery program was much more medically focused. If you looked at it from a very objective standpoint, curriculum, what we talked about, how many babies we had to catch, how many hours in clinical, how many GYN visits, all that. Like, if you put it on paper, it is much more medically focused. There are midwives who practice more medically focused in a medical setting. So of course it's going to be different. A midwife practicing in a hospital is going to have so much red tape from the hospital that they have to abide by for the most part, right? Versus a midwife who's unlicensed. Let's just go to the whole other end of that spectrum. An unlicensed midwife doesn't answer to anybody. They're practicing how they want to practice with the knowledge and wisdom and learning that they've acquired. And that's also great. And they, because somebody needs both of those things. Like, someone wants to be in the hospital. Someone wants to have an unlicensed midwife who has no barriers to care, right? And so I think it's an overarching thing that trickles down into individual communities. So I think because the CPM LM community has been practicing in the home birth setting, like, you know, the birth centers have been open, were open for a long time, but it was still very different than the home birth, like, community. Even when I first got into midwifery, I had no idea that there was like a home birth midwife community. I thought I knew the midwife community, right? And so I think because nurse midwives are newer to the scene, it's just different. I think there's maybe a lack of personal interaction. Like, I have assisted so many of the LMCPMs in our community that I don't personally experience a lot of that. I think in some regards, yes, it's like, you know, there's all these individual peer reviews. We don't need peer reviews for our licensure. So that's another thing that I've come to realize, because you guys have to have a certain number of peer review hours to renew your mm-hmm. license. I don't ever have to peer review, technically speaking. Like,
okay,
it would be very silly.
That's weird.
So
especially it's like if you used to have OB supervision, you would think that you would be required to have peer review. That's wild to me. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So I think because of that, because it's not something required, because we're newer in the scene, I think this idea of having us join certain pockets of things just seems brand new for people. It just seems different, right? I don't know how much of it is a perceived difference in the way we practice, because, you know, as you and I on a very personal level know, we practice almost the exact same, and we have varying backgrounds and we have different education and different licensure, but like as individuals we're very, very similar in the way that we do this work, and I think that there's a lot more individuality on both sides than I think is generally, I don't know. I feel like people like to either be put into boxes themselves or put other people into boxes. And that's in every regard. That's not just midwifery. That's right. In everything. But I think that could be a part of that.
I think too is at the end of the day, it comes down to the fear of being judged and feeling like perhaps – yeah, just not being the perfect midwife and that questioning of, oh, well, why did you do it that way? Which, like, even amongst LMs, you know, we still have those constructive criticism conversations, you know what I mean? But, yeah, I think it is probably just that fear of being judged, which is so sad because it's like we need to, again, collaboratively work together because we could support each other so much. I do feel like it's getting better, but, yeah, especially – 5 years ago, it was hard. It's very closed community. So I think that you and I are just going to have to have more giant peer reviews of trying to bring everyone together. And even like taking this conversation further, student midwives. It is so hard for student midwives to find a preceptor to even be able to get in with midwife for peer reviews, to get in with midwives, you know, as birth assistants. So I think we've talked about this years ago, but I would really like to at least like once a year, twice a year, have a get together of all types of midwives. Even shoot, if we could find some labor and delivery nurses, some CNMs that are hospital based, birth assistants, student midwives to get together and expand, you know, those networks, that could be such a beautiful thing. So let's work on that. Okay.
That's huge. And it's a gap that needs to be bridged for sure. You know, and it's funny as you're talking about student midwifing and as we segue into motherhood and midwifery, when I was in school, I was the only person at a birth center for the most part. There was another birth center who took some of the students, but I was, you know, at the birth center full time basically. And I remember having a conversation of expectations and I was like, I can't be on call 24/7. I'm still working a hospital job. My husband's a firefighter. I have, you know, by that time, Violet was 2.5. But I was like, that's not, that's just not going to work for me. And also, you're not paying me. So I feel like, you know, like I can't have a more than full-time job, a mothering job, and a wife job. Like I can't do that. And I think everybody else, because a lot of them were at Kaisers. Kaisers take lots of student midwives. And they had shift schedules. They went to the hospital for shifts. They went to clinic for shifts. If they were not at one of those two settings, they weren't on call. They weren't thinking about midwifery school, right? And so I was kind of like, this is what everybody else is doing in a different setting. This is what I'm going to do. And I think that's a huge difference, because in your programs, you guys are more of a fellowship role. You are the midwife. You follow your midwife everywhere. You do every visit for the most part, unless there's another student who's sharing it with you. You're going to every birth. You're doing so much. And I know that paid midwifery studentship is a big conversation across the whole country. And it is an interesting piece of the puzzle into the bigger overarching continuation of clinical experiences for students who then become midwives, right? You know, because I think I've seen it in commentary on some of these Facebook groups of like, well, I wasn't paid as a student. So like, oh, well. And then other people are like, no, no, I was paid and it was a huge impact. It made me be able to not have to work through midwifery school, and it helped me to pay for childcare. And like, this is a huge hill that I will go out on. And it's just interesting because there is no expectation of getting paid as a student in a nurse midwifery program. I'm not legally allowed to take money as a nurse midwife student, but I'm also not at all having the same expectations that you guys have.
This is a conversation in so many levels of student midwifery and the paths of it that you see it on the boards, whether it's about the preceptorship, the payment of it, the expectations, that mentality of, oh, well, this is how we've done it. So, you know, this like, what's the hazing period? Also, like, there are horror stories amongst some student midwives that they were asked to do very unethical things for their midwife that do not fall within that realm of midwifery at all. And it is so wrong. And I, my hill is like, know better, do better, you know? Mm-hmm. So you and I have had the conversation on, you know, the payment of students on birth assistance, you know, trying to maximize that. I also think that another part, and this is going to be a different conversation for later, but to touch on too, is I don't know what it was like for you guys, but in midwifery school, I thought it was kind of wrong that in order for us to get like our PAPS experiences, our well women exams, breast exam experiences, IVs, blood draws, we were required to volunteer our body, you know, to get that. So it's like, well, we're all, you know, this is how you're going to get your numbers. So you got to do it. I was like, there is something so horribly wrong, because for someone who has, I mean, even if they don't have trauma around that, but the feeling that they're going to have to speak up and say, no, I'm not okay doing that. And the attention that that's going to come onto them, like, and again, it's this expectation of, oh, well, we're all doing it, so get in line. Like, that is so wrong to me. It is so, so wrong to me. But,
Yeah, and that is a difference, because I think maybe we did IV. I don't even know. I'm trying to remember. It was so long ago. We had a standardized – so in nursing schools, in undergrad and graduate programs, there's this thing called standardized patients. And so they are people who go through a training and then are getting compensated to come in and act in whatever patient web presentation mm-hmm. that they're given, right? They're like given a handout of like, your name is blah, blah, blah. You're this year old. You're coming in for this chief complaint today. Here's what your vital signs look like. And then you kind of play act with the student. And so we had someone who came in who was a standardized patient for us to do pap smears on. And that was like her thing. She was like, all of us lined up and we did a pap, and she told us, you know, gave us great feedback, because mm-hmm. she was so self-aware. She knew exactly where her cervix was, the angle, the everything. She was so anatomically aware of her body, which was wonderful. And I remember that was our experience of doing a real pap, but it was like on this person who was there and getting compensated for her time. And it is very different than, like you said, of like, well, this is just how we're going to do it, because you're right. Anyone who's uncomfortable is going to be like isolated and feel like they can't speak up, because if they do, then they're like the odd man out if they do care, or that like fear of, you know, retaliation in some way, shape, or another. And that's what I mean. I think that bleeds into kind of the way things operate. Well, this is how CPMs practice in Orange County, and this is how the nurse midwives practice, and this is how starkly different they are. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it almost just keeps feeding into that mentality of like, this is how things are done, and that we're just going to keep doing it that way.
Right. Well, we're not. We're going to break that mold. Okay. So obviously you got into midwifery or nursing. Well, no, let me rewind. You definitely got into midwifery after you were a mom. And then during, you know, being a nurse midwife, being licensed, you had another baby. So how has becoming a mother shifted midwifery for you in how you practice and how you view it? How has that impacted your experience?
That's a good question. Yeah, I was a birth worker when I had Violet, but not yet a student or midwife, right? And that already had shifted dramatically for me. I remember being, I don't know, like 5 hours into my 22-hour labor. And I was sitting on the birth ball and I looked at Tommy and I was like, this is for sure why people go to the hospital right now. I can imagine it. Like, I can imagine this would be, I'm not comfortable and I know it will continue to be uncomfortable, right? And I like made it as a little joke and then many hours later had a baby. But having had Iris after being a midwife and after working as a midwife was different in its own regard. I continued catching babies and going to births up until 13 days before she was born. That's when Alexi was born, one of my dear, dear friends. And there was something really magical on being at birth pregnant. I think it was really, especially because it was my second baby. It just was really, really cool. It felt very expansive, which you were there at Iris's birth. Her birth was very expansive. You've seen me mother her. She has been a very much a different crack that has opened me on a cellular level. And so I felt that in pregnancy. She was very much that presence in pregnancy too. And so one of the biggest differences as a midwife going into having another baby was I need to do postpartum different. I preach all of this postpartum care to all of my clients. I know how hard it was when I had Violet. I really need to have a plan for that. And it's, you know, as a midwife, I was like, I'm going to have my baby. She's going to come however she's going to get here, like whatever that looks like. I, you know, reviewed all the deviations of our plan and I talked them through with Tommy and we felt prepared for whatever path needed to happen. And that was all within the first trimester. And then I spent the whole rest of my pregnancy preparing for postpartum. Like I was like, great, great, great. If this happens, this is what happens for her birth. But like, what are we doing for postpartum? And so a piece of that, right? Because people get pregnant 10 months before their guest dates, it was the preparation of like, I had her in June. So I already was fielding so many inquiries of like, I'm not going to be back yet. I'm so sorry. And kind of sitting with the time frame that felt right. And I actually, outside of going to Taylor's birth with Selah, I didn't have my first client back until 8 months after she was born, which was significant for me to be able to do that. I had a couple clients that were going to be earlier and they transferred out of care. One had her baby at 36 weeks, so we couldn't do anything about that. And then one transferred out of care. But it timed out exactly how it was meant to time out. And every birth since then, so she's going to be almost two, all the babies I've caught since then, it's been an interesting dance of having two, you have four, managing their needs. You know, the age gap is big. So I feel like the hardest part still, it wasn't when she was little because she could go to all my visits with me. It's as she's gotten older, it's that management of, you know, making sure their needs are met, making sure my parents, who are our childcare support system, have their needs met, all while meeting my clients' needs and my needs, right? Like it's kind of this meeting expectations everywhere thing. But having been a midwife with her experience, pregnancy, birth, and postpartum, really gave me that inner voice of – sorry.
Oh, that's pretty.
Oh, thanks. The inner voice of this is what you need. You know, I had like my little midwife voice of myself in the background of like, no, this is what you need. You need to do this nutritionally. You need to do this body movement wise. And it was a different perspective than I had had with my first.
I remember the day that you took the socks off and there was a group text that went out that I'm free of my socks. No more socks. And it was so funny. I'm like, she saw it through because the socks thing was a hard thing for you. I remember there were a lot of struggles about it. But yeah, I mean, I can just I don't know if contest is the right word I want to use, but you did an amazing job at prioritizing yourself. And it was a struggle for you because there were times that you're like, well, maybe I could take this one, or, you know, because you really missed being out of the loop and you were jonesing a bit, but you really did a good job at like staying patient and allowing yourself to adhere to your plan with that, the whole postpartum experience. It was beautiful to watch. Yeah.
Well, and you're, you know, as always, my sounding board of, you know me, and you know, you, I feel like because we're so similar, you know me in a way that you are similar in your own self. So when I ask input, like, I feel like you literally can be like, well, what would I do? And what would Sarah tell me to do if I was the one asking this question? So I feel like that's why you're so frequently my sounding board, is because I'm like, she's going to tell me exactly what I need, because it would be the same thing that she would need to hear if she was asking me.
Exactly.
And so you're right. I was jonesing a little. I was attempting to figure out how I would feel. And as always, so grateful for my sounding board to be like, no, you're okay. Like,
right. It'll always be there. So we kind of touched a little bit on, you know, some big challenges with balancing motherhood and birth work, we'll say, being childcare. And the biggest one, I think, is the expectations. I think these are starting to hurt my ear. I'm like, okay, I ditched them. I ditched the Blu-rays. I did the best I could. Or blue blockers. I always call them Blu-rays. That's aging myself a little bit.
I like that.
Remember Blu-rays? Like after DVDs, yeah, we thought Blu-rays were going to be like a cool thing. And then they were like $40 DVDs and it lasted for like a year, and now we have these DVDs and Blu-rays. I still have VHS too, but anyway, I digress. So the balancing of expectations is insane, and I don't think people who don't do the type of work we do understand the container that we have to be for so many people, while kind of, you know, coming back to that whole midwifery island conversation, while doing it alone. Like, it is so hard. And, you know, we both have amazing partners who are so insanely supportive, are so insanely tolerant and involved and patient when we're spiraling about, you know, this situation. And what a blessing that we both have that, because not all birth workers do. So I just want to take the time to acknowledge that, but it still feels really alone. And thankfully we have each other. We also have plenty of other amazing midwives in the community that we call sisters as well, and other birth workers. So Sarah and I have a group of, it's a group text that started off as a book club, 2 year, oh gosh, it had to have been 2.5, 3 years ago, because you were pregnant. And I think it's five of us, and we've got us as midwives, student midwife, doula, childbirth educator, postpartum nurse, lactation consultant. So we are all wearing many hats in the birth world. And so we have each other, and that's essential, but it's still not enough. You know, there's just, It's really hard. I wish I could find the words to articulate. Like, we'd have to do a day in the life of a midwife or a birth worker for those who are like, you know, birth nerds, but aren't really in the work yet. But we get approached all the time about, okay, and it's always past clients. And like, I always think, like, goodness, like, what an honor that someone had such a phenomenal experience that I got to bear witness to, that now they want to get involved in birth work, right? But we get asked all the time, how do you juggle it? I want to become a doula, but I don't know how, because, you know, the kids are little, or my husband works a full-time job. How did you go through midwifery school as a student? And like, I don't know. I don't know how I did it. I really don't, because it's hard. It's so hard. But it is one of those, you know, jobs that you have to have support on every single level in order to successfully do it. And I feel like, I don't know the statistics. I was actually going to try to look up some statistics on like the turnover rate for, you know, doulas or community-based midwives. I remember when I got trained as a doula through DONA almost 13 years ago, the statistic then was that I think it was like 90% of certified doulas will quit within the first 5 years.
Really?
Yep. Because of burnout, because they don't have, you know, support systems in place. I also know that the divorce rate is very high amongst on-call birth workers, or I think, you know, also first responders, you can go to that level too. But it's just demanding. So have you found any balances, boundaries, rhythms to help you, or do you feel like you're still free falling? Because I do. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's been interesting. I feel like with Violet, when I went to school and I was in midwifery school and I was on call and catching babies and still birth assisting, she was old enough that she was like totally chill and independent with my parents. Like, she could be with them for 2 days. Like, I remember if I was on call at the birth center for school, I would just drop her off at my parents if Tommy was working. So then I would just be at home. No one had to like scurry to try to figure out how to get here. And then we had Iris. Well, even prior to that, then I was working in my own practice and I had my own clients. And, you know, then you're on call for 5 weeks. Boom. 5 week window. Someone goes into window at 37 weeks. Who knows when they're going to have their baby in that 5 weeks, right? And that was a big shift coming from the birth center for our support system. I feel like my mom, oddly enough, she's never been a birth worker, has like this weird inner sense. Like, she has like the sixth sense of birth work, because sometimes she'll be like, I just feel like your client's going to have a baby in the next few days. And then they do. So
your mom is nice. Just a special human being. Like, there's something right? very unique and magical about her anyway.
Yeah. 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 It's like that intuitive sense that she almost doesn't even realize she has, which makes it really interesting.
It makes it so much cooler too, because there's no ego with it, you know?
She's not trying to be intuitive. She just is like, I feel like they're going to have their baby. And then they do. And so it was interesting at first, because it was kind of this like, ooh, feeling like for everybody, right? Like, Tommy would have to go to work. I would be at home with just Violet. And then it was kind of this like, okay, well, if my client calls, like, do I bring her to you in the middle of the night? Do you come to me in the middle of the night? Like, what are we doing? And so, as soon as we fine-tuned that, we got pregnant with Iris, which was still a planned, like, conversation for months leading up to conception. But then since she's been born, it was obviously different, because she still nurses a lot, and especially in the middle of the night. And so it's less of a my client's in early labor, I'll just drop the girls off with you and they can stay the night. It is much more of a like, okay, they're in early labor, do you want to come here? Do I come stay with you too? Because I don't want to leave Iris if I don't have to in the middle of the night. Now I feel a little different. She's almost two. She would be completely fine if I wasn't there, right? It's like, it's only when I'm there that it's mama. But it still feels a bit scrambly, because it's not – even if I only have one person in window, it doesn't – that's still 36 days potentially, of who knows when that's going to happen. And with Tommy's job, it's also very unique that Tommy's a firefighter. I would love to know the statistic of how many midwife, husband, firefighter, like midwife, firefighter couples. There are tons of nurses and firefighters. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a lot of midwife firefighters unless they don't have kids, right? Or they have a live-in nanny. But it still feels a little scrambly just because, you know, for example, in January, not fire season, right? It's not fire season. I can usually predict August to October, November will be probably pretty busy. He was gone 28 days in January for fires. Like, he was slammed. And so it is kind of this scrambly feeling of like, it's just not sustainable. Like, you're talking about burnout, and it's, you know, my kids are day to day right now, if they're so little. So I try not to sit too much with like 5-year plans, but I have always been a big 5-year planner. And it's almost like too stressful to think about. So I just block it off. I'm like, I can't think about what this looks like in 5 years from now, because like, I don't want to sit there and get worked up about what this looks like, right? So I think some of the most basic ways that we've made it work thus far is having a plan when Tommy's gone, and then when he is home, trying to work some of my work schedule into that so that my parents get as much of a break as they can, and trying to work when Violet's at school so that my mom is only watching one of them at a time, which is just, of course, less work for my amazing 70-year-old mother, who is the Oma of the century, watching my kids all the time, right? Like, so I think that's been something in the past like 6 months to a year since Iris has gotten bigger, of like, all right, how can we minimize stress over here? Because everyone else's stress being low makes my stress low. It's funny. It's kind of like the balance of like, it doesn't matter how relaxed and at ease and how much self-care I'm doing if everybody else is up here, because I'm automatically back up here, right? Like, I need to like figure out, how do we get everybody else to be more regulated to do that? And so that's one of the tricks that we've done, but otherwise still a little scrambly.
Yeah, I think that when someone asked me about, you know, my thoughts about starting midwifery school or becoming a doula, and they have young kids, that's the first question I ask is, okay, well, what are your support systems in place? What does your normal routine look like? Because if you don't have support, like, you got to figure that out, because we have to fly out in a moment's notice. And even though a lot of times we have a good amount of heads up on early labor, there are plenty of times where someone has a precipitous birth. And I mean, I have one time specifically where I had someone rocking and rolling, and there was no one that was able to get to me in time for the kids. I wasn't going to be able to drop anyone off. So literally had to bring my kids. Someone had to collect them from the house I was at. Like, it is just, those times are few and far between, but you still have to prepare for that. You know, it is such totally. A unique job where people don't understand the touch and go nature of it. So having support systems for childcare is number one. The other thing is people usually get ooey gooey and want to join birth work when they're still fresh postpartum. And I have mm-hmm. talked in past episodes about how I am so grateful that my first preceptor had a hard rule that, like, you know, she preferred you to be after a year postpartum before you came into a preceptorship with her. And at the time, I was like kind of butthurt about it, right? I was like, oh, I was taking it personal, because emotional Jesse does, you know. But I realize now how important that is, because you're not going to get that time back. And you don't want to have to feel torn between, you know, showing up for your preceptor, your commitment to midwifery school, and then motherhood. Because guess what? The rest of your career, you're going to feel torn between those two things. Having missed totally. Children's birthdays, having missed holidays. And so, you know, number one is child support, having that figured out. But also understanding that, like, it is not a job you can call out of. And mm-hmm. are you ready for that in this phase of life right now? Because you will not get back the youth of your children if you're doing this alone. And that, like, for me is probably my hardest thing about balancing motherhood and midwifery is the mom guilt. Is like, I mean, even today, it's a Saturday, we're recording this. I got to go to my daughter's, you know, volleyball game, and I'm so happy to be here and sit and, you know, have this conversation with Sarah. I've got another conversation right after this, but I'm still doing this for work and not with my family, you know, so you're always feeling torn between the two things. So I'm saying all of this that, like, if you're feeling this, like, drive to midwifery to birth support in any frame, and you've got young kids, like, birth work's always going to be there. Really, really sit and evaluate, like, okay, is this the time of season for me? What are your expectations around the practice you're wanting to grow? Are you going to be able to take just one client a month, or are you going to need to take four and be very full-time and busy? And so for those that decide, like me, like, I'm headstrong, I'm still doing it, I'm going straight for it, and I don't care, no one's going to tell me no, because I'm stubborn and I'm thick-headed, and I'm going to take four clients a month because I'm going to do it because I love what I do so much. What Sarah knows about me is I'm really big on boundaries. It's like my favorite conversation. It's my favorite thing. And I still, you know, I got to fine tune mine all the time. But I am so regimented in my schedule that, you know, I hold clinic on these specific days. These are the times of clinic. These are the times that I do home visits. These are the times I do postpartum visits. I don't really have much of a social calendar because I really prioritize my health. Of this is the time I go to the gym. This is the time I go grocery shopping on this day. This is time I meal plan. I am so regimented because the rest of our job professionally is a free fall. We are flying by the seat of our pants. And as you were saying, like, constantly having to, my nervous system is also triggered by those around me. I need my family to feel nice and, like, you know, regulated in order for me to feel regulated. And the way that my family feels regulated, because there are so many of us, is having structure where we can. Because when mom gets called to a birth, everyone's scrambling and I have to step back into that afterwards. So balancing motherhood and midwifery, or again, birth work in general, because, you know, being a doula for many years prior to midwifery, it was the same thing. And so before going into it, have some sort of concept over what the schedule of your life is going to look like. Who's going to be with your kids? Are you ready to be, you know, away on major holidays, birthdays, anniversaries? The one thing I think that you benefit from having Tommy's profession, it has forced you guys to plan your family time out far in advance. And we just talked about this. My family, unfortunately, because we're so immersed in everyone's immersed in my job and the nature of it, we never take family time off. Like, we never do trips together. We, you know, we're just day to day. But Sarah is so good about, you know, she has to because of Tommy's job, planning out their family vacations like 18 months in advance. And it blows me away because she'll be like, hey, you know, in 5 years on this day, can you cover me? I'm like, Sarah, I might not be alive. I don't know. So that, I think that is amazing too, because even though you might feel like you're scrambling, you know, day to day, the fact that you're prioritizing that time with your family is so beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, it is forced with Tommy's job. I think it's also, you know, the first year we were living together. I want to say it was the first Christmas we were living together. Like, our first, well, he was already a firefighter, but like my first big kid job as a nurse, and I had to work Christmas. And my parents, my dad having been a firefighter, were like, you know, oh, no big deal, we'll come to you, we'll do like the day after Christmas, day before. I don't remember what we ended up doing. But it was much more of a thing for his family, because they were like, well, no, but like, what do you mean? We both are working on Christmas. And obviously now we're so far into it, they're used to it. But like, it is one nice thing is that if, you know, we're kind of used to that. If I go to a birth on a holiday, always redo the holiday, right? It's a little harder as the kids get older, but yeah, it's interesting having to plan it out. My mom has always, as long as I've been in existence is a big planner too. So she's, you know, I texted you the other day, they have a trip plan for next May. It's not even this May. They have a trip plan for next May. And she's like, well, I know that you need to know far in advance. And I know people will get pregnant and you'll have to know ahead of time. And like, I just want to give everyone the most heads up. And I was like, that's great though. Cause that is kind of how you have to do it. You either have to, in this work, do last minute trips where you're like, oh my gosh, my client had her baby 2 weeks before her 42 week mark. Like, I have 2 weeks off. Like, let's go somewhere. Or alternatively, you have to plan something a year plus in advance so that you know not to take someone or to have for sure coverage, right? Especially on Lonely Island, you know, you have to.
Well, going back on that part of it, though, so I missed Christmas 1 year. I've missed Easter for whatever reason, like 3 times. I wonder if I'll miss Easter this year again. So I learned from that because Christmas is our biggest holiday in our house. And I now just take the majority of December off. So it's not even a concern because my kids are older and it's a big deal. We can't redo it. And, mm-hmm. You know, I only have my two oldest half of Christmas Day. So it's like I absolutely have to be there Christmas morning. But with that being said, if I'm taking all of December off, I'm taking a whole month of income off. I'm not taking 4 clients for a whole month. That's really hard. So even if you do plan it out far in advance, if you're on Lonely Midwifery Island, that is a huge loss of income. So all of these reasons, I think, is why midwifery or community-based midwifery, the way that our region specifically does it, is not sustainable. And I mean, there are so many life-giving things. And I think that's why for those of us that do this work and we plan on doing it long-term, it's incredible. I mean, anyone who's sat with me, anyone who's listened to an episode before, you guys know how emotional I cry in like almost every episode. But like I get so worked up and passionate about talking about midwifery to the point or birth in general that the cutie that works in the recovery room, he's like a 20-year-old guy, Carlo, if you're listening, hey, he works at the gym in the recovery room at the gym. Somehow he knows everything to know about, he could basically assist me at a birth because he knows everything there is to know about birth. Because here's Jesse at the gym just, you know, yapping about birth because we're so passionate about it. So that's when you know this is where you're supposed to be. It's life-giving, you know, being able to see a baby take their first breath, being able to watch a mom re-enter her body, watching a dad, here I go, my tear ducts are starting to sting, here we go. It's incredible. There is nothing like it. But how can we continue to do this when we're 80? You know, like I think I got licensed at it was the end of 2020 or maybe the beginning of 21. I'm already struggling, you know, like I love it so much. I'll never walk away from it. But we've seen so many great midwives in our area have to leave midwifery, have to, you know, there's a few awesome nurse midwives that worked at the local birth centers that they couldn't even hang with a shared on-call system in a birth center and had to go take hospital-based jobs because it's not sustainable.
There's so much of this work that is it's constant for us. It's sitting here right now thinking about my client who is 1 week and 1 day postpartum. And like it's thinking about my two clients in window at 37 weeks. It is thinking about my clients that are turning a year old this month, that are turning 2 years old this month. It never ends because it is such a work from the heart. Like it is everything. It's everything, you know, and you're gonna make me cry too, because there is a whole different level that goes into being a midwife for someone and that goes into doing this work, because there is nothing like holding that space for people as their families grow. And it doesn't go away ever, right? Like I have babies turning 2 this month and like I constantly think about them. And like, sure, we're friends on social media. I see them all the time still, but like it's always there. It's like a piece of your heart that's always there. And it's so different than any other type of healthcare work because you clock out. There's a clock out. And even when we're off call, even when we're – even in that 8-month period of time where I was off call with Iris, I still had clients joining care. I was still doing prenatal visits. I was still doing postpartum visits for people who had their babies before she was born. I was still best friends with half my clients, like, and hanging out with them. Like, it's just this never-ending extension of ourselves. It's not a job. It's not a career. It's literally an extension of our whole life. Absolutely. outside of our own children. And it's so magical to get to live in that. And it is something that makes me not want to stop doing because it is so magical. Like, you know, even last night, you know, one of my clients and her two babies, her oldest is 4 days older than Iris. So they're little magical Gemini besties. And like her baby that I caught in their bathroom and my oldest baby, we're all hanging out. And like, it's just, there's something about that magic that is so unique. And I never want that to be tainted by the stress and lack of sustainability. You know, absolutely. Like because it happens. You see midwives get jaded. You see them be one person in the room and a different person when they step out of the room because they can't do it anymore. They have to be this personified midwife who shows up and gives and gives and gives, and then they leave and they're like, fuck, this is hard. I can't do this anymore. I'm exhausted. I have 6 more people who could have a baby in this week. And like, they're just, it's pulling from a place. And at some point, you know, you can only fray a thread so much, but before there's nothing left to fray, you know? And
right. I mean, even just talking on that real quick, like that's the other part of this work that makes it really hard, that causes that thread to just fall apart, that causes that midwife to become jaded, is say a birth doesn't go according to plan, or say someone we're so connected with and so bonded with, something happens and she has to transfer out of care prenatally. Say, I mean, any of these things that occur that we take on as an emotional toll as well, guess what? We don't get to just call out the next day. Or say we were with a client for like a 2-day long labor, and then we have clinic, you know, to show up to, maybe we could call out that next day out of clinic, but we're still on call for perhaps 3 other people. You know, that is what I think also impacts the burnout rate, you know, not having sustainability around just even that everyday flow. It still continues. So what in your opinion needs to change in this system or culturally or in our area to make this work more sustainable for midwives and birth workers alike? Because all you doulas, we see you. You guys are with them a lot of times way longer than we are. Yep. And for you, you sometimes don't have those peer reviews like we have in place to process those hard births, or perhaps it was a hard hospital birth where you can't like call the OB and say, hey, can you explain this to me? I encourage doulas to always reach out to me. If we have a hard birth, if you have questions about how something happened or something I did or recommended, girl, hit me up. I want you to understand that I'm here for you too, because your work, what you do, is so needed in our community. We don't want you guys to burn out either. We're all in this together. But anyway, going back to the question, Sarah, what do you think needs to shift for this to be more sustainable?
I mean, it's the same shift that needs to shift in so many regards of motherhood in general. And because birth work is motherhood, parenthood work, right? Like it just is. You have to have someone to hold you in this space of holding space for so many people. And yes, Tommy and John are amazing husbands and partners. Our children are wonderfully understanding to the point that they can, right, for their developmental age. And we have peers and we have friends and we have each other. But unless you're really walking the path together and sharing the clients together, there's not really quite anyone who can hold you in the same way. if you're doing it alone, you know, the long birth or the hard transfer, or the hard postpartum, the hard breastfeeding experience, all these things that we hold for people, if we're doing it without someone with us, if we're not being held equally by someone and being able to hold them back, it's harder. It's the same reason we can't mother isolated. Like, no one is thriving alone in motherhood. I don't know why we have this pressure to thrive alone in the space of supporting and expanding motherhood. You know, it's the same. My clients having their ups and their successes, and having their downs and their heartaches, I hold that. And it's different if you're doing it alone. When you have someone that you're doing that with, it will work better. It will ease not just the logistics of call, the logistics of doing prenatal visits. It's the emotional support that we need. And that's the same in every birth worker, right? The doulas who go to a 24 plus hour marathon birth, who get 2 hours of sleep and go support someone else through another birth. Like, they haven't even had the time to process the first experience they were at. They haven't had the time to sleep. We have to have a paradigm shift in the way that we're viewing holding space as midwives, because we shouldn't be doing it by ourselves. It's not beneficial for us, not beneficial for our clients, to be stretching and stretching and pulling that thread, right?
Right. And so Sarah had mentioned earlier in this conversation another midwife named Nancy. And Nancy is a nurse midwife who used to serve in our area. She's phenomenal. And for those that aren't familiar with Nancy, she moved to Arizona, and I believe they're moving to Tennessee here like very soon. Her business is, I always say it wrong for whatever reason, Emergence Midwifery?
Emergence.
Okay, thanks. So check them out. So Nancy has been such a trailblazer, I feel, in midwifery in general, you know, whether it be for nurse midwives and community midwifery, and then just kind of leading the way with what seems to be a really cool solution to sustainable midwifery practices. She started this practice in Arizona, and then she started adding midwives in, and then they started adding doulas in. And I mean, they just like grew and grew and grew. And it seems so amazing. And, you know, Nancy's going to be on the podcast here soon, so you guys will get a chance to hear her talk about all of this. But I mean, I've been very vocal with Nancy that I'm always admiring everything she does. And, you know, I would love to model, you know, some things after her. But with that being said, you know, Sarah and I have a really cool announcement. I wish like I could like enter a drum roll, but this has been a conversation that we have been having for years. I think the better part of 3 years, on how do we make midwifery more sustainable, you know, for ourselves selfishly, but for our clients and for the community. Like, this is just not working for anyone. Sarah and I, as mentioned, we operate very similarly. We have the same energy. Our minds work very alike, but at the same time, because of our different experiences, there are plenty of times where we're always kind of case sharing, like, hey, I've got this situation with this client, X, Y, and Z is happening. What are your thoughts? And even just yesterday, this happened with one of my clients, where Sarah and I at the same moment were like, oh, but it's because of something she said that I was like, I didn't even think about that. And it's really cool how that already naturally happens for us. And in the past, there's been, you know, some hangups on like, how can we kind of join forces where it's cohesive, because we do kind of have a little bit of a geographical distance from each other. With that being said, let this be the first announcement of this officially. Sarah and I are joining forces, and Sarah is going to be coming on over to the Gold Soul team and being a nurse midwife under Gold Soul. And we will be kind of having a joint practice that's going to be uniquely operated to where we will be sharing call. And because of that geographical, I think I made that word up. Geographical.
I like geographical.
Okay, we're going to use it. We're going to use it.
But I like it.
Because of that distance, we're going to be offering prenatals in two different locations. Sarah will have an office down in South Orange County. I will remain here in La Mirada, which is on the border of Orange County and LA. So clients get the option of, you know, bouncing back and forth. That way they can equally meet us, or they can kind of, you know, just stay here or just stay there. And they are going to get the brain of a licensed midwife in the brain of a nurse midwife. I don't want to share too much yet because we do have some really cool, unique offerings that our packages are going to include together that no one else is offering. And it's going to be open for those that are like, I just like you guys. I don't want to have a home birth, but I want to come hang out with you. There are going to be group things that we're going to be offering to the public as well. That feels weird saying that, but to anyone. So I am so jazzed, and I'm talking too much. So Sarah, do you want to jump on in?
No, like you said, we've been trying to figure this out for literally years, and it's so funny. Speaking of the woo, right? Like I pulled my moon deck cards, and I pulled my cards that were talking about collaboration and having everything you need within you. And then the next morning, your text of, you know what? Let's talk this through again. Let's talk through it till we can find a solution, because it needs to happen. You know,
I'm going
to
interrupt you. I want to interrupt you really quick because I don't think I even told you. You and I, we've been so busy talking about all of this that I haven't gotten to share, I don't think, this side of my life with you, and how that random text that morning came about is I have been on a unique personal spiritual journey and reopening my heart to having my own unique relationship with God and what that looks like for me. And I've been just sitting quietly in this space and really focused in a practice of prayer and meditation and just trying different things on for size. Anyway, with that being said, there have been countless times where Sarah has like texted me like, okay, so how can we make this work? And I've always been like, Sarah, I don't think it can work. Like, I don't know practically how it can work, logistically how it can work. And anyway, there was this night that I was just like sitting and reflecting on things and, you know, in a moment of prayer. And it was like super clear that I just heard this voice. I'm like, you're going to make it work with Sarah. This is going to work with Sarah. And so I literally texted you that morning, and that's where that random text came from. And for the first time, there was just so much peace because, as you know, I've been kind of hesitant and like, I'm so scared. How is it going to work? And just leaning into my faith and like, okay, the cards are going to fall. And I think it's really special that like we both had like these spiritual confirmations at the same time. So sorry for interrupting, but I had to share that with you.
Did you tell me that right now to make me cry?
A little bit. Yeah. Telling me that? A little bit. Yeah.
I didn't know that. And that's it. I wonder how synchronistic that timing was. Because it's so funny, because you're right. It was just like a very clear and defined moment of like, everything's gonna happen. Like it's gonna do it. And so, yeah, we're really excited to be able to come together for sustainability for ourselves, which, you know, in the same regard as so many people can feel, if we're regulated and we're helping regulate each other, that's going to bleed out into so many things. It's going to bleed out into our families, our clients, our community. You know, the goal here is to, how can we make birth work more sustainable, thus more accessible, because it's a huge piece of the midwifery puzzle in the community midwifery setting is like, how can we make this more accessible to people? And so that's, you know, one piece of our kind of lean in on our geographic location differences is like, you know, now someone who's in North Orange County can go to La Mirada and to Laguna Hills to see us, but someone in San Clemente can come to Laguna Hills and La Mirada. They can, you know, split however they see working for their own lifestyles, which is huge because Orange County is big. It's a big, giant county. And, you know, one end to the other can take hour and a half with traffic, right? And so, you know, we're hoping to be able to bridge that gap too of being more accessible throughout the county. We want to be able to improve community education and knowledge, especially for people who aren't having a home birth, right? Like there's so many beautiful things about community midwifery that don't equal home birth. And I think that's a big misconception that we're going to be trying to kind of remediate. You know, we're hoping to bridge the gap with hospital settings and how can we improve those inner personal dynamics with physicians and in hospital midwives and the doulas that support both settings, and how can we make everything more transparent and thus operate more functionally. You know, that's like a huge, that's one of the soapboxes I could go on and on about, especially having worked in a hospital setting for so long in different settings, is that women's health has a huge need to bridge the gap. Up triaging and care is normal in every other setting except for women's health for some reason. And so, you know, we're hoping to improve that knowledge and awareness too. And yeah, I mean, we're so ready to share in this work in a way that we've already been doing for so long.
Yeah, I'm so excited. So yeah, as Sarah said, there's going to be a huge emphasis on education. We've got quite a few things in the works on what that looks like, whether it's remotely, whether it's just with our clients as a benefit to having the both of us, or to anyone outside of our immediate community. We're hoping that, you know, this also can help to inspire others to join more collaborative forces within the business to help sustainability, because we're not meant to do this work alone, you know? So super jazzed, a lot of cool things to come. So you're going to see more announcements in regards to the inner workings of this. But for now, for those that are interested in working with us, we are going to be taking clients in our shared practice with due dates starting in January of 2026. So consultations are done together. We offer them via Zoom, and we go through all the different tiers. We'll have different packages available. And yeah, definitely inquire. And then for birth worker events and other community events, that will all be announced on Instagram and on the website as well. So any final thoughts that you want to share, Sarah?
I know I've said it. I'm going to keep saying it till we're old and gray, but I am so eternally grateful for you as my friend and as someone that is just gets me on a level that I don't even get myself sometimes. And I feel like I wish we could have known each other as like small children so we could have been friends for even longer, but feels like we all have always been there for each other. And I'm just so excited to expand our relationship even further and get to do this work officially together.
Me too. I love you. And thank you guys so much for listening. I know this was a longer episode. And I will have Sarah's contact information as well in the show notes. And we really look forward to doing more interviews together. So you're going to hear more from Sarah and see her around social media and the website a lot more. So thank you guys for listening, and we will talk to you soon. Have a great day. Thank you for joining me on this journey of growth, connection, and conscious living. If you found value in today's episode, share it with someone you love, and don't forget to subscribe so you never miss a moment. Follow me on Instagram at Gold Soul Midwifery and sign up for the newsletter to stay connected and in the loop. Until next time, stay grounded, keep growing, and remember, your gold soul shines brightest through the beautiful and messy moments of life.